Good morning, everybody. This is Dave Weiner coming to you from, well, I'm somewhere in Mississippi. I'm on U.S. Highway 45 going southeast. Got on this road in Meridian, Mississippi, and I'm going to get off it in Mobile, Alabama, which is a total of a little bit over 100 miles, and it's an excellent road. It's a four-lane highway, almost no traffic. Easy on, easy off, and I've been driving today, 142 miles, started at 7 o'clock, it's 9:16 right now, so it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, making really good time, doing McDonald's coffee and McDonald's unsweetened iced tea, and you know, and I'm blasting through back issues of Adam Curry's Daily Source Code, and I was listening to a soliloquy from Adam. And I just had to pull over to the side of the road and take a few deep breaths. And I said, well, it's a good thing that my podcasting setup is so, like, incredibly good and easy right now that I can just, like, put on the headset and get one recorded. Because he said something, that, boy, do we have a misunderstanding. And I want to make sure that we get this corrected as soon as possible. So first, here's the segment that Adam of I think this is the December 29th Daily Source Code. So hold on one second, let me get this going. So
the center extender, kind of an iPodder.
Here comes,
and he's posted a link about it on Engadget.com.
Right, so this is the lead up right now
for you to check out if you're interested. Something about the show notes that Dave and I discussed in our talk yesterday. I said, you know, how many times do you check out the production show notes? He says zero. Never check them ever. So why is that? He says, well, because if I wanted to check the notes, then it would have to be there at that moment. You know, so I would be talking about something. He should be able to pick up the iPod and somehow get to that, which I think would totally be a function of OPML. But then he said something that kind of scared me, because he says, I don't know where... Well, he knows where the show notes live, but he says, you know, when I do my aggregator scan, the show notes don't pop up. He says what he would want, and this is what kind of freaked me out, is a way to scan the show notes to make a decision on whether he wants to listen to the show or not. This is a very frightening thing for a broadcaster, or a podcaster for that matter. It makes no difference for any communicator. Because it's like judging a book by its cover, which means that not only do I have to now make a great podcast, but I have to make great show notes as well in order to make sure that people check it out. So actually, I've decided I don't want people checking out my show notes. I want them to listen to the podcast.
Okay. Thanks, Adam. Now, that was totally not what I was saying. All right. So now, before, just let that settle in. I'm going to get the car going up to my usual 75 miles an hour now. So that I can, like, make my excellent time while I'm... It's a point worth making. I mean, hold on a second. I wonder if you all can hear... I keep wanting the motor sounds to be sort of part of the podcast, the audio of the podcast. But this damn Lexus is so goddamn quiet that it's kind of hard to... I get that. Anyway, so let's see. We're up at about 70 miles an hour. I have to go a couple more. There we go. 75 now. So anyway, so here's the deal. First of all, I asked Adam, this is something that I realized, and I thought I ought to share with him, that the show notes really aren't part of my user experience of his podcast. And that's not like something that keeps me up at night. I don't worry about it. It's not something that really bothers me that much. The reason why is that I get the value out of listening to the Daily Source Code, and that if I want to find something, well, I'm pretty good at finding things on the internet anyway, and I'm more going for, I don't know, maybe I can figure that out in a second. There's one other thing I want to say is I am committed to the Daily Source Code. I will never not listen to the Daily Source Code until further notice. I mean, maybe at some point I'll just decide that it isn't worth the time, but you know, I tend to be pretty loyal to programs that I get sort of hooked on, like for example the West Wing, which it's like it's got to be jumping the shark now or transforming into something completely unrecognizable as being the West Wing. At the end of the episode, I think it was the season ender for this year, at the end, you kind of think that Bartlett is dying, and I have this strange feeling that that I kind of wished he would. Oh, my God. I should not laugh so much when I do a podcast, by the way, because I think I sound like a fool when I laugh. I have this cackle. It's like a nasal thing, and I don't even hear it when I'm laughing. But when I listen to the podcast on playback, boy, I gotta go, oh, geez, I wish you wouldn't laugh. Anyway, so I'm, like, gonna, like, I can, like, Adam, I'm gonna be listening to your podcast, you know, for the foreseeable future. You know, I'm a programmer, so I never say forever because, you know, there's always Murphy's Law and, you know, famous last words, and I don't want to say forever because I can't say that. I mean, but I'm not, like, I will never, like, judge a book by the cover, and I will never not listen to a podcast because I'm not there, you know, and I agree with you, I think, completely, that this isn't about information, and this is where I think that people who don't understand podcasting, I don't know how to explain it to them, but it is not. I mean, it's not like watching The West Wing isn't about information, even though I may get some information out of it. I may, you know, accidentally learn a thing or two, although I completely don't trust it because, you know, it's a TV show, right? And you know. Oh, with Adam, for example, though, like in the podcast, I'm now like mid. I was three behind, and now I'm 1.5 behind. And so the bit about Linux running on the iPod is really good news, and I'm glad to hear that. I did know that you could do that because it was in Scott Canaster's book about iPod. What did he call it? iPod hacks or iPod secrets or. Whatever. I mean, he has a sort of like geek's guide to the iPod where I've learned actually a lot about the sort of hidden features of it. And he shows you how to install Linux on it, which is really cool. And, you know, you could, if you had OPML, this is like a little sidebar, but if you had OPML on the iPod, then you could write an OPML browser. I guess the question is, can you gain access to the buttons on the iPod? So that, because, you know, with four buttons, with menu and in and out, and what is the other one? In and out. Whatever, you got four buttons to play with. That's enough to browse an outline, basically. And the little, you know, wheel thing isn't too bad either. So you need expand and collapse and move the cursor. So you've just used two of the buttons, and you've used the wheel. You haven't even used the middle button. I would actually, maybe just use the middle button to expand and collapse, and use the cursor wheel to use the wheel to move the cursor. That would be pretty good, you know, that would work pretty well. So, you know, and that would be very exciting. So, okay, that's an example of information that I get from a podcast, but I still don't think that's why I don't listen to it for the information. I listen to it to sort of like, it's a human impulse. You know, we are built genetically to want to keep in touch with other human beings and more in touch with some than others. And as a matter of fact, to keep in touch with a very small number of human beings compared to the number of human beings that exist in the world. So, and Adam Curry, for me and for a lot of other people, is one of those people. You know, just because we have technology doesn't change our nature. We still want to live in a village, and Adam is a member of my village, and I'm going to listen to you no matter what you put in your damn show notes. So, you know, let's just get rid of that idea right off the front. The only reason I want the show notes to show up in my aggregator is because, Adam, that's when I'm in link-clicking mode, okay? That's when, number one, I have a net connection, and number two, I'm looking for cool things to look at, right? I'm not actually wanting to see the show notes show up in advance of having listened to the podcast. In fact, what I would much prefer to have is to have the show notes show up in my aggregator run after I've listened to your podcast. because that's the point at which I know. And, you know, the same thing would be true of, like, 60 Minutes. If 60 Minutes were available in audio and as a podcast, you know, it would be really cool if they sent me the links via my aggregator after the show had aired, maybe 24 hours after the show had aired, so I could say, you know, have a chance to think about it and digest it and let it fade away in memory a little bit and then see it pop up and then go, oh, yeah, yeah, I wanted to know more about that. And so, okay, click on the link. It's a question of sort of like guessing when the right time is. I'm not thinking that the right time is before. I'm thinking that the right time is after. So that's a very key point. All right. Hey, it's really cool that I have the headphones on because I had another thing that I wanted to, you know, we got to figure out a way for all of us to have that little feature where, you know how you, like, when you're listening to, you're playing back something and a guy says, like the guy who said, and Mr. Curry, and you go, well, let's get one thing straight here. You can't call me Mr. Curry, or somebody says, Adam, you're like the smartest, most handsome guy in the world, and you put it on pause and you go, boy, or whatever. You know, think about it. You got the two-way device. Wouldn't it be great if we all had the two-way device? And right now, I had to stop. I had this impulse. I had to stop and get this on the record so that as soon as I pass my truck stop, which I should get to probably within an hour or two, I can upload it, and then basically we can set the record straight, you know, once and for all. But wouldn't it be great if we had this handheld device that's an iPod that had a pause button, you know, and then somehow I could, like, take a little area of your podcast and excerpt it I don't need to do that. I just want to be able to, like inject a comment and then be able to pick that up later and do something with it. Maybe not even publish it or the equivalent of broadcast it or whatever. So anyway, another thing that you talked about was, well, what to do about the tsunami victims. And I've been thinking about this a lot. First of all, you know, there isn't like much we can do. I mean, we can give money, and you know, that's about it. I mean, now, people say that you're going to go there and you're going to help them out. I don't know. I mean, don't we have other things to do? I mean, I know it sounds kind of crass, but you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm a crass sort of guy. What I want to do is ask a question that people are probably going to bang me over the head for saying it, but the hell with that. I think it needs to get asked. It's like, Adam, what about Rwanda? What do we do about Rwanda? And what about Darfur? You know, did we mobilize? Now, why is it that we mobilize? That we all, I mean, and I feel it too. I mean, the TV, you know, the TV coverage, even though I haven't been watching a whole lot of TV, certainly have been trying to catch NPR whenever I can. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm aware of the news, and I'm certainly aware that this is getting, like, a huge amount of coverage. Why are we so focused? I mean, okay, it's 100 and we're up to 120,000 people. It's probably going to climb up to like 250,000 people before it's all over, which is like a horrendously huge amount of people. Hold on a second. I'm on a detour here and I'm going to pass this guy. There we go. Did it. One of the nice things about having a powerful car is that I remember I used to drive these roads when I was a college student. Not exactly this road, but, you know, sort of southern. The South lagged behind the rest of the country in getting interstates. And so, like, for the longest time, driving from New Orleans to Florida, which I did a lot, meant going on two-lane highways. And that, back then I was driving a Datsun B210, which is Datsun, for those of you who don't know, Datsun was the name of Nissan before they changed the name. And it was like a lawnmower. I mean, it was a tiny little car. It was like the smallest, at that time, the smallest car that they made. And got great gas mileage, like 40 miles to a gallon. Which, again, at that time, this is before, you know, hybrid cars and stuff like that. It was actually incredible gas mileage. And I bought it new. And I loved the car. It was great. Except it was light as a feather. And, you know, you're driving in, like, this two-lane highway, and all this truck traffic coming against you, and every time you come against the truck, he blows you all around, and you're grabbing the wheel, and you're trying to get back on the road, and then all of a sudden another truck comes in, blows you all over the place, and it's like a white knuckle. And of course, at age 19 or 20 or whatever I was, you're not that experienced a driver, so, and your mind, you don't have good mind control. And basically, now I can sort of say, all right, well, I have to focus on the area between the dotted lines and the white line, and I have and I have no control over what the other guy is going to do. And if he, like, decides to come out of his lane and hit me head on, well, that's just the way it is. And all my job is to stay within that, you know, good, keep, you know, some room on either side and, you know, not go over the line myself. But, you know, I relived my death every time I came, you know, up against one of those trucks. And nowadays I've got a car that just like, boy, if I need some power to pass somebody, I just floor it. gets up from, you know, whatever I'm going, usually slow because the guy in front of me is going 40 miles an hour or 50 or whatever. I floor it and I'm up to 80 within like 1, 2, 3, 4, like around that time frame, I'm going 80. And if I need to go 90, I can do that too. I can keep it floored. And I'm by the guy quickly, whereas with the Datsun, forget it. I mean, you know, you floor it, and it just goes, I think I'll just keep going the same rate I was going. A four-cylinder car, you know, and they're little cylinders, too. So anyway, so Rwanda. Let's go back to Rwanda, and this is where I'm going to say some politically incorrect things, but, you know, the hell with that. As I said to Scoble, you know, if you're like, if everybody likes you and you're a blogger, and this goes for podcasting and for professional reporters and anybody who's just sort of like trying to like say things that matter, and if everybody likes you, then you aren't doing your job. I mean, you're going to have to ruffle some feathers if you want to sort of like get at what's really going on, because, and ask the questions that matter. And, you know, let's try to understand ourselves here, because we really don't have the equipment to understand the tsunami. That's kind of what I wanted to say to Adam. Adam says, well, what kind of sense am I supposed to make out of this? Well, the problem is that we don't have the tools to make sense out of it. Basically, hey, people die. We know that. I mean, you know, have you had a loved one die, somebody who you were very close to? Yeah, I've had that happen. And then, like, okay, well, what the fuck just happened? And, you know, maybe you gravitate to the, well, God is an asshole type thing, but that hasn't ever happened, and I don't think that's the right conclusion, because death is inevitable for all of us. So tell me what is, you know, okay, 125,000 or 250,000 people all died on one day. Well, I don't know what the normal death rate in the world is, but my guess is that it's probably something right around that. And death is a very commonplace thing. It happens all the time, right? Now, the thing about this, I guess the difference between Rwanda and the tsunami and the earthquake is that one was an act of God, another one was an act of man. If you were going to go help the people of Rwanda, you'd have to go fight a war. Whereas, you know, there never was a war with the tsunami, so we could actually, like, all get together, the whole world. And actually, you see that happening. What a missed opportunity for the president, by the way. I mean, to, you know, a Bill Clinton, for example, would not have missed this one. He would have said, oh, wow, here's a chance for me to feel their pain and you know, do some world-uniting type, you know, group hug type stuff. And just, you know, I'll be the guy standing in the middle, and I'll make a tear come down my right cheek, and, you know, I'll give an inspiring speech, and we'll all, like, and it would be a good thing. I'm not being cynical. I think that would be a very good thing. It would all be acting, probably, almost certainly all acting, but that's fine. Sometimes, you know, that kind of acting is good, especially considering that, you know, we missed so many opportunities to build some real strong coalitions. But, okay, so, like, what's the difference between... Okay, I'm going to pass a guy right now. I'm going to use the algorithm. You hear the car going? I can't... look down at the speedometer to tell you how fast it's going, but it's going pretty fucking, yeah, it's 80 miles an hour. We went from like 60 to 80. And, phew, gotta love it. So if you can get a powerful car, and you, whatever, another politically incorrect thing to say. I was gonna say, if you can afford one, it's nice to have. Of course, I'm like playing right into Osama bin Laden's hands, if you look at it on a global scale. Not a good thing to do. So are all those Texans who say that they're out to get Osama bin Laden. I wonder if they realize that their gas guzzlers are actually, you know, make the oh, no, whatever. They make the countries of the Middle East more attractive targets, more appealing. That's what he's going after, by the way. I don't think he wants our land. Our land isn't particularly valuable. What he wants is Saudi Arabia. My guess is that it'll all be over when he runs Saudi Arabia. He will stop bombing the U.S., and our oil prices are, you know, well, they'll probably go up. Yeah, he might keep bombing us to keep us on our toes or whatever. But anyway, so why is Rwanda, 3 million people, by the way, that's a lot more people than are dying in the tsunami, unless the numbers change dramatically. It's a lot more people. Aside from that, is it really the magnitude of the people, the number of people that is important, or is it, you know, how can you feel that many people dying? I mean, it's really hard to have feelings about that. It's hard, it's maybe other than the enormity of it. But if 120,000 people make you feel, you know, humbled or agonized or whatever, well, don't 3 million people make you feel approximately 25 times more? Because it's, that's how much bigger it is. It's huge. And of course, it has nothing to do with whether it was a man-made problem, whether men killed the people or not, versus nature. Because, well, there's the World Trade Center. Tell me about that one. That was 3,000 people. And you know, obviously a tiny number compared to the number of people who died in the tsunami, and a tiny number compared to Darfur, and an even tinier number compared to Rwanda. So there must be something else going on. Maybe it's the inaccessibility of Rwanda. Maybe it's that we didn't find out about it until after it happened. Or, more likely, it's racism. You know, honestly, I mean, they were all black, and, you know, or, and they, I guess the correct thing to say is African-American, except they weren't American, they were just African. Hey, there are white Africans, too, so you just, they were black people. And 3 million black people. But that's the funny thing, is because the Sri Lankans and the Thais, and they're all dark-skinned people. They're Asians, but and they're poor. So what is it? I mean, you know, it doesn't add up. We don't have a philosophy, I guess. We don't have a way of sort of saying, I understand this makes sense, that we would care a lot about this one, but the other one doesn't hit so close to home. We've got a huge African-American population in this country, and we got over the whole idea that I thought we did, got over, at least at an intellectual level, the idea that we're somehow superior to them. The color of skin is a predictor of a person's intelligence or a statement of their worth. Oh, by the way, worth mentioning, crossing into Alabama right now. Nice looking state. I've been here before. This is the state that driving Miss Daisy, they did the driving in this state, in Alabama. And actually, the road looks a lot better. I like to honk the horn if I can remember to do it as I'm entering a new state. So we're not going to be doing a lot of driving in Alabama on this trip. Basically, cutting through the southwest corner of the state and coming into Mobile, and that will probably be a kind of an urban experience. We'll try to keep that to the minimum. Then I get onto I-10, and then I go east. And I go east as long as I can go for the day. I won't get all the way to the Atlantic Ocean tonight. I also want to pick a quiet place to spend the night because I don't want to get caught up in New Year's celebrations. That, you know, I don't like drinking, and I don't think, hey, I'm not going to be able to avoid it altogether, but it's a drinking holiday, and as so many are, and I'm a teetotaler. I'm not a drinker. I don't like drinking, and I don't like drunks. So, you know, if we want to, like, talk about books or something, or the future of the internet, or how do we really feel about things, yeah, this is something I would be up for, but unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be happening. So, where were we? Right, Rwanda. What? The puzzle of when we care and why we care, and do you believe that we really do? I mean, when people say, oh, I can't believe it, it's so awful. I mean, all right, let me give you a hug. Oh, that isn't what you wanted. Well, what is it? So I'd be interested in hearing. I mean, of course, there are the great stories. And there also is another, maybe this is it, actually. This is interesting. There were a lot of Westerners tied up in this one. These were resorts. A lot of them were resorts where Westerners go, and thousands of Westerners, there's no doubt that thousands of Westerners died in the catastrophe. So maybe that's it. Maybe in order to identify with it, we have to believe that we all know somebody who was involved. And I do, actually. I knew that immediately. As soon as I heard about it, I knew that I had a friend who was in Thailand at a beach. Luckily, she was at one of the beaches that was sheltered. And she did not get, was not destroyed by the, it was not even touched by the tsunami. And, but I'm sure when she gets back to the U.S., there'll be some interesting stories about that. And no doubt we're going to be hearing, you know, interesting stories about this for quite some time to come. So, but in the meantime, if you have some theories about why this is the media phenomenon and Rwanda is not. And by the way, well, I hardly even want to talk about this, but that's, you know, my philosophy is if you don't want to talk about it, and that's probably the best thing to talk about, is what about Iraq? You know, I mean, how many people have died in Iraq since we invaded Iraq? Well, we know that it's like about, whatever, 1,400 Americans. And we don't know how many Iraqis. My guess would be, and it's only a guess, would be probably about, let's say, 25,000. Certainly more than 10,000. And the numbers are going up all the time. I don't care whether they died at our hands or whether they died at the hands of the so-called insurgents or however they died. You know, people that wouldn't have died had, oh, I mean, it's hard to know, of course. You know, the other side, if there is, like, two sides to this, they're always saying, basically, oh, well, you know, he was killing his own people. You know, as if that were, you know, well, then why not Rwanda? I mean, you know, the scale was much bigger than even Iraq. I mean, so if Saddam Hussein killed 100,000 people, remember, 3 million people died in Rwanda. And it's not an anti-Bush thing, either, because that all happened on Bill Clinton's watch. I mean, it's just a question of our own values. A lot of people died in Iraq, but we're not, like, that's not, like, something that people are talking about or thinking about, or maybe it just, there are just some things that are so horrible that you just want to put them out of your mind. What's horrible about that one is that it wasn't an act of God that caused their deaths, but it was other human beings that caused their deaths. So, anyway, one positive, optimistic thing I heard in a report on NPR about Iraq, which I was glad to hear, was that while they're having trouble getting the candidates in the upcoming Iraqi election to sort of state a position on any public policy issues, the one thing that they all agree on and are running on the platform is that as soon as the elections are over, then it's time for the U.S. to get out. And I think there's our exit. You know, we can say, okay, we've now helped transition them to a legitimate government, and the legitimate government has told us we would like you to leave, and so therefore we'll see you later. And you know, and then it's a way of declaring victory when we will absolutely become losers, because very high probability, if that's the outcome, that's the way it goes, that it's going to end up, that Iraq is going to end up no friendlier to the United States than Iraq was when Saddam Hussein was in power. Very likely a government that is close to Iran is going to get installed, maybe closer than we even care to think, and that a civil war will be going on there for a long, long time to come, because, you know, it was a stitched together country. But what do I know? For all I know, it'll turn into the next Panama, which I heard on the radio this morning is actually, despite all the doom and gloom predictions that people made, are doing an incredibly good job of running the Panama Canal. They're running it better than the United States ever did, and there's a tourist industry going on there now. They're raising money to widen it so that they can accommodate all of the ships, all the shipping, ship-type ships that exist in the world, and all is good in Panama. So, you know, we went in there and we took out Noriega, and whatever came in his place is like doing a good job. So sometimes I guess sometimes we do good. I don't know. So perhaps this will be one of those times. But I guess my wish is that we would broaden our compassion and we would not apply it so selectively, and that we would have high regard for every segment of the American population, and bend over backwards to try to show the African Americans that we not only care about Europe and Asia, but we also care about Africa. That this, in general, it's a good thing to do. I mean, it would be a healing thing to do. So, and Adam, one final note before I go. I'm a committed Daily Source Code listener. If you ever come to the conclusion that I said that I'm going to, like, make a decision, yay or nay, on any particular episode, go back and relook at it, because there was a misunderstanding there, and that was never my true intent. And thanks to everybody for listening, because this is an incredible way for me to pass the time while I'm driving. So anyway, it's been great. Oh, God, I have to keep filling the air until I can pull over, because I'm going to... Oh, here comes a crossroads. And you know what I'm going to do? This time I'm really going to do it. It's a place called Four Points. It's on US 45. And I'm really going to get out and take a picture here, because wouldn't it be cool if we had a picture of the place where Morning Coffee Notes ended? And this, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, lesbians and gentlemen. I love that line. This is almost certainly it for 2004. It's been a wonderful year, and I wish you all the very best. Let's have a great, 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 great 2005. So that's it for this set. That's it for this, whatever you call it, for this year. Okay. Talk to y'all later. Bye.